And we're live, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode. Welcome to another episode of Nugs Country Wrestling Podcast. This is episode number 11. Special guest calling tonight will be the one, the only, Dillon Cage. He's a good friend of mine, a great wrestler, has traveled the world. I'm sure he's going to have some great stories, going to have some real interesting conversation. But first, let's talk about what's going on in our lives. Ladies and gentlemen, my co-host, my best friend, my homie, my ace, Big Country. How you doing, brother? You on the line?
Doing pretty good, man.
Fabulous, fabulous. How was your weekend? What's going on in the world of Big Country? Let's talk pro wrestling, brother.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got the whole week off this week. I've got to prepare myself for the Reimer Cup coming up this weekend. Not sure if I'm actually in the tournament or not, but I will be there with my promo picks ready to do business. And, you know, again, never know. Might have to fill in for somebody.
I could tell you it must be an oversight or someone in that head office is afraid a Big Country got in the Reimer Cup. No way no one else would ever have a chance of winning the cup. So it's one of those two things. And I'm telling you, sounds like you better watch your back, brother, because things ain't always as they seem in the world. We know that.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. I mean, the tournament this year is packed. I mean, you got Timmy Lou Retton. You got Joe Black. You got a lot of trainees that are coming from Ricky Morton School down there. Chris Hamrick's making his return for one night only. You got, of course, former TNA superstar Gunner, rising NXT superstar John Skyler is going to be there. I mean, it's packed full of talent. So, you know, it's just to be, you know, associated with the company is good. You know, I just, you know, would rather be a part of the tournament than just, you know, sitting idly by.
Definitely, definitely. I can feel you there. You definitely always win. It's better to watch it's better to be in the parade than watch the parade all day long. I can tell you that. But this past weekend, I was in Orangeburg, South Carolina, and they had the enforcer, Arn Anderson, came in for special autograph signing. He did a meet and greet with the fans, and he came out and actually said some really great things about the company. He said he was really impressed with the product, said he was really great, very impressed with the production, the video, and the videos he's seen, the lighting system, the stage setup, all that. He thought it was top notch. So CWA once again, Arn Anderson. And of course, he's up there at office there at the big company, WW, you know what. So it's all good. And unfortunately, the Salem Center 6, my heavyweight champion, lost his title. Man, they put everything they had against us to take the title, but that's all water under the bridge. He actually handcuffed me to the ring. I couldn't even try to make a scene.
Man.
But
I'll tell you what, just to brag on CWA, everybody talks about, you know, wants to talk about PWX and their, you know, the production value and everything. If you have never been to a CWA show, their entrance blows PWX out of the water. I mean, they've got the big Titantron type, you know, projection screen. They've got the two TVs on the side with the lighting and everything. Plus, you know, I mean, the whole background is just phenomenal. So, you know, before you go ahead and say that one's better than the other, go check out CWA. I think you'd be very much.
Well, I mean, I've seen PWX, a great product, phenomenal talent out there. Production is great. Brian Kanabruski, whatever his name is, the owner and promoter, is doing a great job out there. He's definitely surrounded himself with great people. He's brought Steve Corino in. He's got an all-star lineup from John Skyler to Gunner's there. I mean, the list goes on and on of great talent that's there. I mean, yeah, he's definitely got a great show. But CWA, we're 12 years in the business, and I'll tell you, 12 years in the indies is unheard of, so he's doing something right down there. Roger Reed is definitely doing his thing.
They are constantly drawing. I mean, every show I've been to, you know, they've had over 300 to 400 to 500 people nonstop.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
a regular night without a name, we've got 300 people, even if it's raining outside. I mean, the people down in the area love professional wrestling. They come out, and they are diehard fans. So that's definitely a good thing.
That's unheard of nowadays. In indie wrestling,
we were
I mean,
standing,
it's like...
We were standing room only Saturday night with Arn Anderson there. He just was true. People came out. People got in the car and drove from other parts of the state. I know there was wrestling fans from West Virginia that drove there. There's two ladies drove from West Virginia. I know people drove from Charlotte. So I know some fans that I recognize. Like, damn, I reckon I ain't seen you in years. They came out to see Arn Anderson. And so everything's great. We see some things out here pissed off and mad about it. I'm telling you something, big country. Things I've noticed that happened happened in my personal life this week is wrestling fans that try to be my friend because they become my friend and I add them on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or et cetera, et cetera, you know? They think automatically because I added them that we're best buds and I own things now. It's ridiculous. I mean, first off, they think it's my job to entertain them. And I'm not a wrestler in an event right now. I get paid to entertain fans. When I spin around and act like a fan and put myself and entertain, and that's because I'm getting paid. It's my job. But when I'm on my social media, it's not my job to entertain you because you're at your job and you're bored. It's not my job because you have a lackluster life. You think it's my job to try to bring some levity in your bored, mundane life. It's not my job to do that. Let's be honest. If it was my job, I would be getting paid to entertain you at that point. I mean, let's be honest. And at that point, they think if they become your, quote, friends, that they're entitled to get everything for free. Oh, I don't have money to get in the show. Joey Nugs, you're my buddy. You can let me in the show, and me and my six kids could come in the show for free. Well, you'd look out. You're my friend. We talk all the time on Facebook. I like that picture of you and six from Saturday night, man. It's a bunch of bullshit. I don't own this motherfucking shit.
What really pisses me off is when they think that they can try to get some type of inside information from you. They're like, hey, man, so what's happening next week? Are you going to tell me what's going on? They're like, no, how about this? How about you buy a friggin' ticket and come to the show, and then boom, you'll know what the heck happens.
Right, or they start asking personal information about yourself or other people that you know in the professional wrestling industry. I've had them go as far as, do you have his phone number, man? I need to call and ask him about, are you out of your freaking mind? I don't know you from a can of paint. I ain't giving you fucking shit. You know what I give you? Fuck you. Here's a flyer. I'll see you at the next show. If you ain't got the money, hey, come up with the money. Turn in some Coke bottles. I don't give a fuck. Go rob a 7-Eleven. It's not my fucking my job. It's not, you know? They start asking all these questions. And the worst thing is, they get a sense of importance if they're your friend. Oh, me and Joey Nugs is friends, and they get a sense of importance like they're actually part of the show. They'll come into places and go up to promoters. Hey man, I really love your wrestling show, man. If there's anything I can do to help you, need me to hand out some flyers. I work at XYZ and they're at XYZ bar, and there's always a lot of people coming there. If you want me to hand out a bunch of flyers, man, I'll help you get this place booked out. And then after they do that a week or two, they start hitting up. Well, hey man, can I get some tickets for me and my girlfriend? Man, I handed all those flyers out. I got six kids. Can you get them in for free? Hey, me and you are buddies. Can we get some free popcorn for me and my kids? How about some free programs that we can sign for me and my kids? I like that WWE John Cena merchandise shirt you have over there. Can I get that? Fuck that bullshit. You can't be, if you work in pro wrestling, you can't be friends with the fans. It doesn't work. Because if you try to, you know, they're not really your friend. They're enamored with the presence, the character, the persona that you carry in pro wrestling. They want to be with that. And trust me, they are not loyal to anything. They are always going for the BBD. You know what the BBD is?
Bigger, better deal.
The bigger, better deal. Yes, sir, brother. And I'm a manager, but if I'm the manager of the Insane Lumberjack Timber, they'll talk to me to try to get near him. or if they get near, if they're not going to get near Timber, because Timber, he don't play that bullshit. He's old school. He doesn't even go on social media. He doesn't play up to none of the fans. You will not see Timber hanging out at the 7-Eleven. He won't be hanging out at the Hooters. He doesn't go out to any restaurants after the place. He goes to either home or he goes to a hotel, and he rides alone. He will not if he is playing a heel, he will not ride with a face. If he is playing a face, he will not ride with a heel. You will not see him hanging out. And we just got done fighting. You will not see us hanging out at the Chili's eating chicken wings together. It's not going to happen. I mean, he taught me that type of stuff, and I respect the old school traditions. And how do we expect anyone to believe that it's real if we don't believe that it's real, if we don't portray that it's real? It's ridiculous, you know. So things got to change, and the first thing you got to change is don't try to be friends with fans. Now, if these are people, the only exception you have of that is if these were people that were your friends outside before you got into pro wrestling, or they're friends in your real life, then that's something.
Yeah.
They're not fans. They're your friends that support you. So they're not really fans. They might be wrestling fans, but they're your friends that support what you do. More than likely, if you weren't in the show, they wouldn't buy a ticket or show up anyway. And your friends, for the most part, they ain't going to show up to the shows anyway. I've had a million people tell me, when are you going to come closer to Charlotte? I did 10 shows in Charlotte, none of them showed up. So what do you do?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that was me being pissed off and mad about it, and that's the bottom line, because you can't be friends with fans. They're your fans. If they're your friends, then they think they're special, and they're not special. They deserve to stay in the front row and back. They deserve to pay it for a ticket. They deserve to be able to hoot and holler. They deserve, if you're out there, to maybe get an autograph. Beyond that, they're not deserving of anything else from me, period.
Exactly.
So that's about 8:13. We're about 2 minutes away from hopefully Dylan Cage calling in. But a little something else going on. You know, we're every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Call-in number stays the same, 516-387-1469. Upcoming guest next week is Ethan Case. March 22nd, we have Josh Magnum. And that's wonderful. He'll be calling in. And then March the 29th, Corky Franks, ring announcer, will be calling in. Should be phenomenal. Just had a second ago, I had a call come in. I do believe it would have been him, but he's not on the line anymore. So hopefully he'll call back. But things are going. I'm sure he's trying to get in, because I just seen a second ago. I seen a number come in. Looked like it might have been him, but it's all good. You know, we got a great lineup coming. Corky Franks, you know, he is traveling with Monster Jam, with the Monster Trucks. So he could talk about not only how he went from pro wrestling, but went to Monster Jam, which is phenomenal. And hello, ladies and gentlemen. We on the line. We have the one, the only, Dylan Cage. Dylan Cage, how are you, sir?
What's going on, big man? How we doing tonight?
We are doing phenomenal. You called in. I seen you called in once. We lost you, but I'll tell you, we got you now on the line. We're going to keep you on the line. It's going to be a phenomenal interview. I got my co-host on the line, Big Country. I'm sure you know. You might have met Big Country. If not, I'm sure you probably see him around. He's a big guy. But he's a phenomenal wrestler, one of the big guys in pro wrestling. And Dylan Cage, we are honored to have you on the show tonight.
Man, I'm honored to be here. Yeah, who doesn't know Big Country? Who doesn't know Joey Nugs, baby? I was excited to come on. I couldn't wait to 8:15. I said 8:12 on the clock. I said, I'm calling it now.
It's going to be a great day. Let's get started. First off, let's start with the present. What have you been up to lately, Dylan? I mean, you're wrestling 24/7. Where'd you wrestle this weekend?
Actually, I've taken the last 2 months off. I don't know if you know this. I actually just had a son. So I've actually been taking some time off, and I start back next weekend. I'm going to be in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I think you're going to be there too.
Fayetteville? I'm not in Fayetteville next weekend, but I wouldn't mind being.
Oh, I see you coming in.
Who's running the show? I don't mind coming in if they're running a show. Is it Gouch?
Man, I'll make sure to have this guy give you a call. Yeah, it's a pretty big show, man. They got Boogeyman coming in. They got Red coming in. A few other guys.
Nice. I'd be honored to be on the show. But either way, I might just drive out, just check out the show, even if I don't get booked. Sometimes I don't mind coming out and being a fan, because I know a lot of times
Man,
that's how you meet
way.
That's
hey,
what I tell you.
If
I
we
love
don't
wrestling, no matter what. Exactly. I mean, I've said that a million times. If you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And the biggest thing is most people don't support anybody else, and you got to support each other. It's all indie wrestling. Yep.
I'll say the good thing right now, I think the business is on the rise, especially indie wrestling. I think, right now it's almost some of the best it's been.
I agree 100%. There's more indie wrestling, not only in the Carolinas and the Mid-Atlantic area, but everywhere. There's you go just in North and South Carolina, there, you literally can find a wrestling event at least one in more than one town every Saturday night. In North and South Carolina alone. I mean,
wrestling easy.
Yeah. I mean,
I know guys that are getting, 4 to 5 bookings on the weekend. I mean, they're tearing it up.
Yeah, they bounce from bookings to booking. I see Ricky Morton would do a double shot Saturdays all the time. I've been on events where he came in, they slid him in. He's like, I got another event. I'll slide out to another one.
I mean, yeah, that's right. Hey, we got to make that money while we can.
Amen, brother. You got to make it. So, Dylan, tell me, how did you get started in pro wrestling?
I actually don't even know if you guys know this. My cousin is Tatanka, Chris Chavis. So I was a big fan coming in, and I asked him personally, where should I go? At that time, there wasn't a school here, there, and everywhere. Really, the only two schools or three schools that I knew of was Killer Kowalski, Wahoo McDaniel School, and, the Monster Factory. Well, Wahoo School was up in Charlotte. Unbeknownst to me at the time, he had kind of let it go pass, and Slim and Strawberry Fields, who owned NWA at that time, NWA Charlotte, Mid-Atlantic, whatever you wanted to call it,
right,
had actually bought everything out. They had a strip mall, 3 rings, gym, locker room, showers. I mean, the place was phenomenal. I went up there, man, if I'm not mistaken, it was the summer of 98, if you can believe that.
Right.
I was a senior in
high
school, and I'll never forget it. My first day, you had to pay a lot of money down, and I ran for a mile and a half, and this was in, I think, if I'm not mistaken, man, it was either June or July in Charlotte, 104 degrees.
Wow.
I came with a class of 26, if I'm not mistaken. We had to run a mile and a half, and then they put a cone 20 yards apart. Well, you had to run to that cone, do one push-up, come back, do 2 push-ups until you got to 20. Then you had to do 5. Yeah. Then you came inside, did 500 free squats, and then they had 3. Remember, they had 3 rings, so you had to get in each ring with each guy. Mike Youngblood happened to be one of my guys, and I can't even remember the other two. The other two were kind of like their amateur guys, your shooters. Oh my God, these guys were killing guys left and right. You know what I mean? You're almost hiding behind somebody. You're like, please don't let me be next. But went through that, man. If you survived everything, you came back. The next day, I think there were 3 of us.
Wow. So it started out with over 20 people and it went down to 3.
Very quickly.
Do you remember who the other two were? Or was one of them Mike Youngblood? I know you said that.
I don't remember the one of the guys. Jesus, man, I really don't remember. After that, I remember guys like Gary Royal. Coach Steele was the guy who actually ran my training. He actually ran my tryout as well. God, phenomenal worker. He was an underneath guy for NWA. I mean, just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Him, Gary Royal, and Ricky Nelson were the main guys that were training a lot of the people in and out. So I worked with those guys, man, for a year. And Leilani Kai. Man, I always tell people, Leilani Kai had such a big influence in my career. I worked with her, and that lady kicked my ass for, 2 years.
Wow.
I would actually travel. I lived in the Pembroke area at the time. It's 2 hours from Charlotte. I'd go up there on Tuesday and Thursday. And then on the weekends, I would hop into the ring truck, go help set up the ring. Ended up doing some refereeing until I was done with the training. And then they started putting me in the ring. But, man, I mean, it was incredible. The training there, I tell everybody, was just – it was so intense. There was no playing around. It was straight business. And the guys, you know, they were from that – I tell everybody, you know, everybody's got their favorite eras in wrestling. Mine is the 1988 NWA, Mid-Atlantic. I don't think there's anything any better, you know what I mean, as far as realism in the business. And those guys were just, oh, my God, artists, all of them. These guys were the underneath guys for those guys. I mean, Jesus, they were incredible.
Right.
I had a great time there, man. I was there. Oh, yeah. And remember, this was Wahoo School, so Wahoo used to come in from time to time, which comes to my first story. Now, anybody that knows Wahoo, if you've ever heard anything about him, he was a tough son of a gun. But if you bet the man, it was as serious could be. You know, he didn't lose bets. At this point in time, being a young punk that I was, the amateur wrestling side, man, I was a mixed martial artist, so I could kick and punch and stuff like that. But, man, I tell you now, headlock takedown was like rocket science to me. But now I could 360 flip. I could moonsault. You know, I could do all the high spots. So I thought I was the shit. And I remember Wahoo coming in and out. And I think as the days went on and the more, you know, more comfortable I got, the more shit I would talk to him. So finally he gets in the ring with me one day, and I think I called him an old man or something along those lines. And literally, Nugs, this is 2 weeks into my training, man. I think at this point we were down to two guys, a guy named Jeff Justice, who ended up being around for a little while. And then, believe it or not, Mike from High Spots came in and started training. I remember when they first started High Spots, dude. Incredible.
I can remember, I don't know some of it, because I don't know if you remember around the same era. I remember when Mike wrestled with the homies with Attitude. He had another white guy that was his tag team partner, and they wrestled for a company called American Championship Wrestling. It was run by a guy named Johnny Blaze, which was a knockoff the Rock character.
Okay.
Do you remember that in Charlotte? I remember actually seeing Mike from High Spots wrestling Charlotte, and
That
was out at West Charlotte Rec Center, and then they moved it downtown when they built the new Rec Center downtown. So I actually seen Mike from High Spots wrestle. That was pretty cool.
That's awesome.
I met him years later. Yeah, that's my little High Spot story.
That's awesome.
Sorry,
hey, man, Mike was a cool guy.
Yeah, Mike is
awesome.
Oh, no,
you're good,
really
man,
is.
You're good. But, yeah, he ended up coming in, and the other guy that was actually doing the training with me, he was actually a pit man for Ernie Irvin in NASCAR.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he used to tell us all kinds of stories about NASCAR, man. You wouldn't believe it.
That's cool. That is
but
awesome.
But did that. Yeah, I ended up doing the training. But anyway, so I get in there with Wahoo. He shoots a takedown and gives me a shoot step over toe hold submission. He looks at me with the most evil look. And don't get me wrong. I tell this to anybody that I tell this story to. I deserved everything I was about to get. Everything I was about to get. So with the most evil look in his eyes, he says, "Welcome to the business," kid, and cracks my ankle.
He cracked your ankle?
Yeah, man. He sprained my ankle completely, almost to the point of a break. I was put up for 2 months.
Jeez.
Insane. I had long hair at the time. Man. Oh, yeah. Listen, I ended up calling my cousin Chris, and I told him what happened. He was like, oh, my God. He lit into me being disrespectful and this and that and really smartened me up. To a whole nother level. I ended up going back to the school. I shaved all my hair off. Man, I was a completely different. You know, I came in like a soldier the next time. You know what I mean? Eyes open, mouth shut. And just I really learned from those guys. And like I said, those guys were phenomenal trainers. They would spend hours and hours. You know, I'd come up on a Tuesday and a Thursday. I literally, and I tell everybody, I came off of a farm. My family owned 180 acres. I mean, we were straight farm people. I could not wait to leave. So, I mean, I paid for I worked during high school just so I could go to wrestling school. You know what I mean? I mean, that was all I was focused on. So ended up doing that, got there, started working on the indies, NWA Mid-Atlantic, the AIWF, which is still going, God bless them. You know, and just all these different groups. I remember at the time, the Italian Stallion and George South, they were kind of running opposition to one another. And these guys would literally run 150 times a year.
Wow.
I remember my first year in the business, and I swear to God, the Italian Stallion had a bar on Thursday nights in Georgia that we would go to. On Friday, we would be in, like, Hamlet, North Carolina, and then Saturday in Concord, and then Sunday in, you know, bumfuck Egypt.
Wow.
I mean, he didn't care if there was three people there or 500. You know what I mean? We worked those shows.
Right.
And, man, a guy like me, I mean, you know what I mean? I had multiple gimmicks, man. I would be working two and three times a show. It was incredible. I tell everybody, my first year, I probably literally had 200 matches.
That's phenomenal. That's phenomenal. So, wow. First year, 200 matches. So if you had to, if you had to think of, if you had to think about over the years, how many matches you think you've had? Thousands?
I wouldn't say thousands. Especially the last couple of years, I've only been doing 40 to 80 a year.
Okay.
I mean, definitely over 1,000, but I couldn't tell you exactly how many. You know what I mean?
Real close
to that.
Yeah, I hear different people that are like historians, like Jim Cornette. He could tell you, oh yeah, we were in Greensboro. It was a Thursday night. It was a rainy, overcast night. We were in a main event against the Rock and Roll Express. Baby Doll came in and hit me. I got blood. I mean, he can remember details like that. Dude, I can't remember what I had to eat last Thursday. How does he remember that shit?
That's hilarious.
What the fuck?
Yeah, but those guys, they've been talking about that stuff for 20 years.
Yeah, but I know they know every detail. I can't remember. Dude, I can remember the first day that I started in wrestling. I can remember the first couple wrestlers that I managed, but the rest of it's kind of been a blur for 12 years.
Right, I'm with you there.
You know?
I'm definitely with you there.
Because
I tell everybody, I mean, that was my first 2 years in. I mean, I probably had 300 matches my first two years.
Wow. So what was the first?
I mean,
was the first? What was the first name in professional wrestling outside of being in the ring with Wahoo that you actually wrestled in front of a crowd with? Do you remember?
Wow, I'm trying to think. Let me ask you this: does it count if they became a big star later on?
Sure.
It would probably be Kid Cash.
Kid Cash, yeah, Kid Cash is great.
Kid Cash or Chris Hamrick.
Oh, wow, those are two great for the first ones.
Oh, yeah,
I've not had Kid Cash on the show, but I've had Chris Hamrick on the show, and, oh, man, he told me about how his humble beginnings. I didn't know some of the stuff that he went through, and it's phenomenal. I was really impressed, and I've been told.
Chris has been around.
Yeah, he has been. Yeah, definitely. That's another thing I've been told is by the insane lumberjack Timber that I say the word phenomenal too much. That is a Joey Nugs word, phenomenal. Fabulous. That's
another one
I say all the time. I guess these are words that men aren't supposed to say. Phenomenal, fabulous. I mean, to me, these are descriptive words, but. I don't know.
Yeah, but I guess if you're a lumberjack, you wouldn't say phenomenal or fabulous.
No, you're not going to say, nothing is phenomenal. No, he's not phenomenal.
That's too funny.
By the way, he told me to tell you what's up with you, and we hope to work with you. We're getting ready to open our own wrestling company here in the near future. He told me to get your number off the air anyway. But we'll be doing some things in the near future. Yes, sir. But anywho,
okay. Where are you
let's
guys
continue on.
Okay.
I'm running. We're going to be running in the Lake Norman area, so I'm going out where the money's
okay.
at. I mean, I don't have to worry about it.
Hey,
ain't
nothing wrong with
that. I just got to make sure that I can get them in the building. So I mean, it's going to be that's a great area. There's five cities.
We'll talk
that
off
touch
there.
Lake
I can help
Norman.
You out on that.
Good, very good, very good. We'll talk definitely. I know you're a promoting giant, and you I could probably pick up some pointers from you, brother. But let's continue on. So your first year, you wrestled some names. You got put to the test and literally stretched and broke by Wahoo McDaniels. You humbled yourself. You became a sponge, a student to the game. Where did you go next? I mean, did you stay in the States for a while? I know you've traveled overseas. How many?
Yeah, well, actually, a kid named Jay Wood actually had moved down from Connecticut. He was good friends with Jason Knight from ECW and Just Incredible. They had actually sent him down south to go to a good school. So he was there. So he ended up managing me for a year on the Indies. Me and him just kind of clicked. We were the same age and just had a lot of fun. We really got over, you know, not to really even put myself over, but I mean, really. Now, don't get me wrong. We never went over, but we were over. You know what I mean? We did the job in every company, you know what I mean, because we were just working for everybody. But everybody liked working with us because we worked hard, and we brought,
right.
you know, we just brought it. But we did that for a
year.
Yeah. Jason, ECW, you know, was starting to kind of branch out a little bit at the time. Jason was going to open up a school, and he was looking for guys that could help him with the school. He called Jay, and he hit me up, and he was like, hey, you know, I'm going to move back to Connecticut. What would you think about coming in and trying out to be his trainer? I said, sure. Came up, you know, I had been working at that time, like I said, 300 matches. Listen, during that time, I was still going to Mid-Atlantic every Tuesday and Thursday and as well. So I was 24/7 to business. I ended up moving into Connecticut. I went and tried out with Jason. He loved me. He had a couple guys up there, Ron Zombie, who actually ended up one of my brothers in life. And a few other guys, Fred Curry and a few different guys, Mercedes Martinez, Velvet Sky, these are all his trainees. I was training these guys, man, I was Jason's trainer for about 3 years.
Wow.
So, you know what I mean, working all that time, still working on the weekends and helping, you know, reinforcing the training, you know, that I had just got. It was just repetition. So, I mean, you know, the better I got. And with Jason having a little bit of notoriety, I mean, we were having, you know, Jazz. Jazz was one of my favorite female workers. I thought she was phenomenal. Her and her husband would come in, work with us. Stevie Richards, living right down the street, would come work with us. Crash Holly, Mike would come work with us.
Wow.
All these different guys were coming. Holy shit, dude, how about Mr. Fuji? Came and spent like 2 days with us.
Tell me about
Bob.
That. I'm a Bob Holly mark, but I am a huge Mr. Fuji mark. And when he used to do that suicide butt thing across the ring and knock him down, I used to pop off of that shit. Tell me about hanging with Mr. Fuji for 2 days. I gotta ask.
No, Fuji was incredible. You know, at this point, he was probably 60 something years old. First thing that really threw me off was, believe it or not, how big he was. I didn't realize he was as big as he was. It's kind of the same thing when I met Paul Bearer for the first time. You know what I mean? I couldn't believe how big he was. But Fuji was kind of the same way. He worked with us in the ring. I mean, and if I'm not mistaken, he had opened up a school in Tennessee at the time. So him and Jason were kind of doing some cross-promoting. He came in, worked with us, man. I mean, and we literally just sat and hung out with this guy for 2 days, drinking some beer. And, you know, I was like a little kid, man, on the floor, my legs crossed. Hand, you know, I got my hands under my chin just listening to this guy, listening to him tell stories about pissing on Lex Luger's, you know, his shoe and, you know, just all this different stuff. Incredible, man. Incredible. But he was an awesome man. Loved to rib people.
Was there any stories you could tell us that you didn't want to have
disrespectful. I'd love to hear a Fuji story if you have any.
Say it one more time, Nugs. My phone went out for a second, brother.
I said, I know he's no longer around to say that you can't tell a story unless you feel to be disrespectful to his memory. I'd love to hear a Fuji story if he told you any.
He was just telling us a story once about, I think it was Lex Luger had just first come into the WWE, and this is just the first time I really remember. Luger was coming in, you know, getting the big push with the, you know, with the bus and the whole deal. And, you know, anybody I think it really talks about him from during the time frame, especially, talked about how arrogant he was and this and that. Fuji was telling me he was standing there. You know, Fuji, if there was any problems, he would kind of handle the ribbon end. The guy was notorious. If you've ever heard any Fuji stories, I completely believe him. But he was sitting there, and he was telling us that Luger was just standing there. So Fuji just walks up and literally just takes out his Johnson and starts relieving himself on it. He said that Lex Luger didn't even flinch because he knew if he sold it, he was going to be in all kinds of shit.
Right. Wow.
But he was an awesome man.
Way to go, Mr.
Awesome guy.
Way to go, Mr. Fuji.
Yeah, man.
Right. That's
and then, you know, the next month, Jason would have, he had Bob Backlund coming in. And Backlund run, I think he ended up ran, if I'm not mistaken, man, I think he ran like three camps for us where he would just come in for a couple of days. Because all these guys that I'm talking about, except for Fuji, they lived in Connecticut. So, I mean, Connecticut's not like North Carolina. Connecticut's 2 hours either way. If you're in the middle of the state,
right,
you can go either way. 2 hours, you're at the end of the state. So all these guys were coming in. Backlund, because during this time, man, you know, wrestling's still kind of very territorial. You know, the Southern guys don't work the same way as the Jersey guys. The Jersey guys don't work the same way as the Northeast guys. You know, and vice versa, California, whatever it is. You know, it's kind of territory the way the styles are.
Right.
So, you know, I was kind of going up there, getting used to the different styles, man, and just working all these different people. And the good thing on my end is because I had a Southern style, I instantly stood out. You know what I mean? I had a Southern accent.
Right.
The Southern way of a little bit slower storytelling, you know, and then giving
right
it to them. You know, again, it just
right
set me apart. And then having the manager that really, he was like you, Nooks. The guy was born with a microphone in his hand.
Right.
He actually ended up getting out of the business, and he's the Colorado State powerlifting champion for like the 155-pound weight class.
Wow.
Yeah, man. He's out in Colorado. He's like the number 11, number 12 kettlebell trainer in the world, this guy. You know what I mean? So, I mean, we had a ball.
That is cool.
Yeah, and the main reason that I wanted to come up north was Tony Rumble. Tony Rumble ran the CWA, which ended up being NWA New England. They had the best. You know, the top guys were coming from there at the time. That's where I wanted to be. That's the main reason I moved to Connecticut, really over the fact of Jason. You know, Jason's school was just a job. But the fact that I could go and work for Tony Rumble, man, that was the end-all, be-all. Before I ended up going to Connecticut, when I was actually touring in the Carolinas, you know, I ended up meeting with Greg Price. GP, man, he really helped me out early in my career. And during that time frame, we would go to all the ECW pay-per-views and shows. So, I mean, we would travel from North Carolina to Connecticut and whatever the case was. You know, and I was meeting all these guys, so I kind of knew everybody once I was at Jason's. So it really just helped me out, you know, having a lot of guys giving you advice, helping you out, you know, helping you get up the card a little bit, and really just having a good time. You know, just incredible. Holy crap. Today, if he was in shape, could have a job. You know what I mean?
Right.
That guy was so natural. I mean, really, he was such a good worker. I don't even think he realized how good he was.
Right.
But, man, we ran his school, like I said, for about 3 years. I think my second year, I got the opportunity I had. I don't know if you remember Kai and Tai from the Attitude Era. They had a manager, Wally Yamaguchi. Wally and his brother, Sean actually takes photographs. He's always ringside, WWE, taking photographs for his magazines and whatnot. They actually invited me over to my first tour of Japan. That was October of, I think, 01, if I'm not mistaken.
So
went there, man. I think I was there for – go ahead.
Tell me about Japan. What was different? Tell me Japan.
Man, now Japan is my place of choice. I've actually tried to get my wife for the last probably 10 years to just move there. If I had any place to go in the world at any time, that's where I would go. My first tour there, I was there for 29 days. Out of those 29 days, bro, we were like 25 or 26 of them. And the nights that we were off, we actually did press conferences. I mean, huge press conferences with the press, you know, we're sitting at the stage the whole bit. It was incredible. But, you know, getting there was a complete culture shock. You know, again, you're talking to a country kid from North Carolina who moved to Connecticut that, you know, marbles in his mouth, could barely speak, and then going to Japan. Culture shock. I had blonde
That's
hair.
Phenomenal.
I was going through my Ric Flair phase. You know, you get off the, you're getting off the plane. You can't even understand or read anything. You know, you're just hoping somebody's going to help you out. You know, again, the Yamaguchis, they looked out for us. Me and Sean, we were close in age, so he kind of hung with us and really helped us around. Man, I had the best time in my life that first tour. Oh, my God. I was on tour with Barry Darso from Demolition.
Uh-huh.
Vic Grimes, who was from ECW.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else is there. Barry, Wild Bill Irwin from the old NWA. Michael Modest was there. Hernandez from TNA was there.
Wow.
And I don't really remember anybody else at the time. Man, we had a ball. You know, because all of us were, the guys I mentioned and a few other indie guys, we kind of knew what the deal was. I didn't care what was going on. Wherever Barry Darso went, that's where I went. So, I mean, I knew he had been to Japan, you know, 115 times. You know, I'm the young boy. I know he's the veteran. Yeah, I knew what the deal was. And he loved the fact that I loved to party and hang out and, you know, whatever he needed, I could get for him and this and that. So we go out, man, and during that time, really I'm still this way today. You know, I'm a whiskey drinker. I'll drink beer from time to time, but really, you know, if I'm going to drink, I want whiskey, and I want whiskey here, I want whiskey there, I want whiskey everywhere. They were the first people to actually get me drunk on beer. We had been out drinking with a couple guys. I mean, we were tearing up the town because, you know, we were on a bus, man. We would get up on a bus. They would wake us up, you know, between, let's say, 6 and 8 in the morning. Everybody gets onto a bus, and you're traveling to whatever town. Now, it might take 2 hours. It might take 8 hours that you're on this bus. And, you know, you're traveling with your tour guys, 30 guys or whatever it was. I mean, it was a great time. Everybody just telling stories and ribbing and having a good time. The language barrier was a little difficult to get used to. But, you know, the good thing about wrestling, a clothesline's a clothesline, doesn't matter where you're at. So you kind of get to where you can actually feel what's going to happen and what's going on. And once, you know, being in any new territory, somebody wanting to see what you're made out of. So once you pass that test, you were good thing about me, I really always enjoyed to pass that test. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I always thought it was fun. So, I mean, I never had any issues, no real problems. Like I said, we were there 29 days. We would get to these towns, you know, go to the ring, go work out with the Japanese guys. Yeah, I mean, they would work out once they got into the arena. We'd work out, get ready for the show, do the show, get in the bus, get back to the hotel, go grab a quick shower, go hit the town. You know, and it was that same way for 27 days, 28 days. It was rare that we stayed, you know, in one hotel more than two nights. And you're trying to find places to go wash your tights and this and that. Man, it was insane.
I imagine you probably have more than one or two pair of tights that you had to probably wash them every time you got to another town.
Yeah, I mean, you don't even think about stuff like that. You know what I mean? I don't know, three or four pair of tights. And they had actually given me a gimmick when I was there. And they only gave me one. You know, they gave me the gimmick of Pepsi Boy. And I did the whole, you know, they were sponsored by Pepsi over there, and I would come out and clank them together and spill them, you know, so I'm doused in Pepsi by the end of the night, every night. and I would literally have to wash my gear in the bathtub and hang dry it every single night. And then about once every 2 or 3 days, I would take it to a cleaner and have them clean it for me during the day.
Now, what did the gear look like? Did it look like Pepsi, like a Pepsi bottle, or, I mean,
yes,
what was it?
It for the ears, it actually had tabs, like on the Pepsi can.
Oh.
It had a giant Pepsi logo on the forehead. I tell everybody I was the Pepsi Power Ranger. That's the best way to describe it. I have to shoot you a pic and let you really see it. You, I mean, it's incredible.
Oh, oh yeah.
I have it in the
trailer. I would love to see it. Yeah, I would love to see it one day.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, definitely.
I definitely
later.
Will.
Send me a picture later. I would love to see that. That's phenomenal.
Okay.
There we go.
But,
But
yeah, man, I mean, and I was burning the candle on both ends. You know, I was the young guy on the tour. I loved working 20, 25 minutes, whatever. So, I mean, I was killing it in the ring. And then, man, as soon as we hit that hotel, I was out. Like I said, I was the kid that loved the party, and I wanted everybody to come back to the room and come back to my room, and we were gonna hang out until 5 a.m. and get 2 hours of sleep, take a shower, and keep rolling.
Wow.
Man, I mean, like I said, I did that for 26, 27 days straight. Best time of my life, man. I had such a great time.
Now, did you
like I said,
wrestle?
Guys,
I know you wrestled a lot of. I know you wrestled a lot of Japanese wrestlers. Did you wrestle any of the real famous wrestlers?
I got to work with Tajiri. Yeah,
I actually got
to work with Tajiri, and I got to work with Yuji Nagata, who ended up being a big star in New Japan a couple years later.
Okay. That's super cool. Now, tell me, now, how are the fans in Japan? Well, I mean, how do that? Are they rabid, or are they quiet, or how that?
Both. They're rabid, but in a completely passive-aggressive way. You know, when we would get to the arena, you know, I had the hood, so I had to have that thing on. Anytime I left the bus, it had to be on, you know, until I got back to the hotel at the end of the night. There would be fans at each arena. I mean, we were in, you know, 10,000 seat, 12,000, 15,000 seat arenas over there. So I mean, people would be there, man, and they wouldn't have you sign a piece of paper. They actually had it's probably an 8x11 canvas, believe it or not. And you would sign your gimmick on the whole canvas. Because the first time I got there, I'm signing my name, you know, in just the top left corner, thinking it was for everybody to sign. And they're like, no, the
right.
whole thing is yours to sign. The whole thing. And I said, wow, man, that's incredible. But really had a good time, man. I ended up catching some sponsors when I was over there. You know, just fans that really loved the business, kind of wanted to hang out with you. They would take you out to dinner and things like that. I mean, really, I didn't pay for anything in Japan.
That's cool. I bet you didn't want to leave.
Yeah. No, I definitely did not. I definitely did not. I wanted to come back as soon as possible. I ended up doing three tours over there. I was doing one a year for 3 years. Because as soon as I got back from that, TNA had started up at that time. And Chris Hamrick was going, if I'm not mistaken. And he was like, hey, I got some stuff going on down here. You know, it's going to be a big company. It's going to be the new WCW. Here's what we're going to do. I said, man, I'm in. Because I used to, you know, I used to travel with Chris.
Right.
God, one of the greatest guys in the business, Chris Hamrick.
Oh, yeah.
But I was traveling with him at the time, me, him, and a guy named Chi-Chi Cruz. And if you ever talk to Hamrick, you ask him about that power driver from the second rope and who gave it to him? Dillon Cage. Me and Hamrick, at that point in time, we were working all over the Northeast. You know, we were traveling together, so it was easy for promoters to put us together.
Right.
We were doing, I mean, these shots all over the place. And, with Hamrick, you can do anything. I mean, we were trying, let's put it this way, Nuggets. We were trying shit then that you couldn't pay me enough to do now.
Right.
But, yeah, we ended up coming up with that power driver from the second rope. He did it at TNA and got a job, brother. He tells everybody it was because of that spot.
That's cool.
But I started
That's
working
cool.
for TNA at that point. I worked for them a few times over about 3 years. I think I went down there 7 times, if I'm not mistaken. I think 5 times made it to TV. And I did 2 dark matches. I mean, man, I had a great time. I went out there, I got to work with, you know, just, and I tell everybody this, the first time, I think it was the first time I was there, I'm in a locker room, man, and there's Sting and Lex Luger, The Road Warriors was, or Hawk, I can't remember if Animal was there. I remember Hawk being there and Mr. Perfect was there. You know, and I'm just sitting here looking around like, God, do you see the place that I'm in? You know what I mean? You know, you're just,
yeah,
as a fan at heart, it's almost unbelievable to be in that situation.
Yeah, I know how that is. This last weekend, I was in a locker room with Arn Anderson. Now, yeah, you could try to be,
wow,
as cool as you want to be. I mean, you shake his hand, you know, how are you, sir? It's nice meeting you. And you tell him your shoot name, you know, and you're respectful, you know, and he stands there a second. But then you say to yourself, okay, you don't want to be a super mark. You want to be respected as an equal. Now, what do you do? Do you continue in talking, or you just kind of do what I did? I kind of just slid away from him and let him do his thing, you know?
Hey, listen, man, Arn Anderson's an intimidating person.
Oh yeah, I mean, I completely understand. Oh yeah, and I didn't want him to think. I didn't want anyone to, when the man left, be like, "Damn, that Joey Nuzzle is a real dick." I mean, I didn't want that to be the line that he said. You know,
that's so funny.
That's too funny.
Yeah, man.
Needless to say, that isn't something that's going to be said. So.
Yeah,
Big Country dropped on us here, but that's okay. Big Country dropped on us here, it looks like. But he's been doing with a lot of things. Okay, looks like he's calling back. You back on the line with us, Big Country?
Yeah, I'm back. I don't know what happened. The phone just went.
Okay, so
hey, baby, it's just one of those nights. It's just one of those nights.
Yeah. Might have been a gremlin or something, some kind of squirrel shooting through your line or something. It happens, man. It happens. Got to worry about them gremlins. You don't feed them after midnight. No doubt. Mugwai. What the fuck was the Mugwai?
That's so funny.
That should be a gimmick. That should be a gimmick somebody does, the Mugwai. You come out there, throw water on him.
I'm a big believer in throwing as much stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. Yeah,
you come out there all nice as a mech. Why? Someone throws water on you. You start freaking out and beating them to hell on that. You go start the face. You turn heel.
Now that you said man, Vince is going to have it on TV next week.
Hey, damn, Skippy, that's all right, though. I want my percentage. People heard that the Mugwai came from Joey Nuggs here on the show.
That's right. But, trademark per JoeyNuggs.com.
The Mugwai. That's funny. Anyhow, let's continue. Giggles. I'm sorry, guys. Okay, so
too funny.
You were,
yeah, man.
You're
you know,
still, you're,
I started working for TNA, and
okay,
really at that point, I was traveling from Maine to Atlanta. You know,
okay.
I was calling anybody and everybody. At some point during this time frame, about 2003, 2004, I met. Jesus, what is it? I know him as Joey Matthews. What's his gimmick name now?
I don't know.
Joey Mercury.
Joey Mercury, yeah. Wow,
yeah,
so you met Joey Mercury then? Yeah, I know Joey Mercury.
Met Joey. And me and him actually hit it off really well, and he got me a couple bookings. But the one thing he told me that really stuck in my mind, he said, listen, don't believe all these. Hey, he's like, you can make money on the indies. He's like, but you got to hustle. He's like, and you got to be willing to drive. He said, but you can do it, man. He's like, I do it every day. And
right,
during that point, I think he had just done, you know, real talk, he had really only done about, you know, 5 or 6 months on ECW TV right before they went under. So, I mean, the guy knew what he was talking about. And, I mean, he was making money. He was going all over the place. And during that time, he was with Alexis Lurie, who later became Mickie James.
Yeah, but,
I mean,
yeah,
I was hanging out with him
for
a little while. Yeah, and she and him and her, I mean, they were traveling all over the place. But he was really helping me out. And when he told me that, you know, I got it. So, I mean, man,
right,
I was calling everybody. You know, if I had a show in Boston, Massachusetts, I would call people in New Hampshire, Connecticut. And I always had where I was on a 3 or 4 day run. And I remember during
right,
this time frame, because I tell everybody, they're like, what was your job? I was like, man, I was wrestling. And what they don't understand is I was making the same amount of money wrestling as I would at, you know, at a normal job during that time frame, making $10 or $11 an hour, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You can get
so,
the
I mean,
you
I was
get,
hitting
you can get bookings, you can get, yeah.
That's awesome.
But I tell everybody, at one point, Nugs, and man, I know this almost sounds unbelievable, but as an indie guy, I had done 15 or 18 bookings that month.
Yeah. You know what I mean? 15, 18 bookings a month, you're making some bank, definitely, even in the indies, definitely.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And, dude, and
That's
I was
awesome.
Working it the right way where I was getting shows that were close to other shows, and I was doing a lot of double shots. So, I mean, I was making money on the indies. You know, and that's the one thing I really like and respect about Timber. You know, he understands that part of the business. And, you know, a lot of people really don't get it. We were sitting there. I kind of realized that. I started working all over the place. Still helping Jason with his training during that time frame. We trained a girl, Mercedes Martinez, and I think she's retired from the business now. Everybody talks about women wrestling now. All the girls that you see now watched Sadie Martinez. This girl was phenomenal. I tell anybody, she was the Aftermags really put her over. You know, she was always in like the top 10 of the PWI 500 and this and that. And, you know, they really did a lot of articles and stuff on her. She had a kind of a bad deal in TNA. She ended up going down there, and her finisher was a side suplex. You know, like in Japan, a side salto. And when she suplexed the girl ended up breaking her neck. And that was, you know, that kind of hurt her. She really wasn't able to get back. You know, she did Shimmer and Women of Wrestling and that kind of thing, but really never got to the level she deserved to be at. She was an incredible talent. We ended up getting Joseph von Schmidt, who's a top indie guy now out of Connecticut. All these guys, man, that we were training, they're still around. They're still around and doing big things. I think I've been out of really, because, you know, everybody that comes through the school doesn't always make it through. I would say Jason had about 10 guys that made it all the way through and lasted. And, man, if I'm not mistaken, out of those 10, I think 7 or 8 ended up doing something in the business, you know, some way, shape, or form, you know, either traveling overseas or doing TV or whatever the case was. But everybody was successful.
Yeah, that's a hell of a track record. Good Lord, yes.
Yeah.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
Yeah, man, during this time, I ended up working with a guy named Dan Marotti and John Cena Sr. up in Boston, Mass. I had been working for them, you know, for 4 or 5 years. And we started talking about, you know, I told him I was going to end up moving back to North Carolina. You know, I just had stuff going on with my family. I was kind of ready to get out of Connecticut. So me and my wife ended up moving down here. And that's actually when I met you and Timber and all these guys around that time frame. I went down to Roger's place, CWA, down to Spartanburg. Worked for him for about a year. And, man, I tell everybody this. If NWA Charlotte could have stayed in business during that time frame, man, they could have really done something.
Oh, I say the same thing. I got a chance. I got the honor to work probably 3 shows before they went out of business at the end of it. I mean, after. But I'm going to tell you, they had something there. They really did. That was something unique. I mean, they had one, they had a stacked locker room. But production was there. I mean, it was downfall is the man was coming out of his pocket to pay for everything, and he was wasting money on a lot of things, you know what I mean? Like, for instance, he'd bring Raven in and not advertise Raven's coming in. Great for video if you're really trying to get TV one day to see, oh my god, it's Raven, but your building's already sold out, you're just bringing in talent and it's not really getting you nowhere, you know.
I
remember though, but the other time, I mean, I remember the American Gangsters went in and got their money from JD, and after I went, they went and I put my hand out, there wasn't nothing left.
Enjoyed watching those guys work, though. I was a big fan of Chili Willie.
Oh, I had Chili Willie on the show. He called in live from the Philippines a couple weeks ago. That was such a great interview. Timber told us, because Timber, shoot aside, he had a shoot job. He listens. He listens to the streaming of the show from the night before. And he told me that was one of his favorite shows. He said Chili Willie was just so real. He's just an honest, real guy.
That's
and
awesome.
He tells a story about Chili Willie. I mean, I got my Chili Willie story for Timber. He told me, he said, He did a show, he goes, with Chili Willie. He goes, there was literally about 30 people out in the crowd. And Timber's like, okay, easy night off. He said, he goes, we ain't going to go overboard. Chili said, no. Those 30 people paid for their ticket. They deserve to see the best kick-ass event that they can see. We need to go out there and rock and roll. And Timber said, you know, at that moment I said, you're right. Fuck that. Let's go out. And he goes, we went out for 30 people and had the match of the night. He goes, but he remembered that. He goes, yeah, you always, don't make a difference in 7 or 7,000. Go out there and rock and roll for them. Because those people have never seen you, you know. That'd be like if it was a hot night and I decide, you know, there's only 12 people out there. I'm not going to put on the whole Joey Nugs suit and the hat and the cane. I'm just going to go out there with a pair of sneakers on and a sweatsuit. No, that's not what those people paid. They deserve to see everything, you know.
That's right, brother. That's right. I've always believed that.
Chili Willie was one of those type of guys, you know, and I worked with Chili, and Chili was one of those hard workers. He made you believe that he was real out there.
Yeah. I enjoyed working with him and his partner. I can't remember his partner's name. Man, I had a great time. I got to work with him, I think, two shows. As far as Charlotte goes, man, I was there every show. I missed one show in the year and a half that they ran.
Right. It was
a great time.
Oh yeah, they were great. And they were good workers too, and they were good. They were good workers with that gimmick, and they had some cold heat, and they were equal opportunity. When they yelled across the crowd, they talked trash to black people, white people, Mexicans, brown people. They don't give there was some COVID out of people. Yeah, they had some of that cold heat that you talked about. I was like, oh. Oh yeah, they were great at that stuff. I'll give it to them.
Yeah.
I told Chili Willie, I said, man, I love you like a brother, but I said, if I ever got to fight you, I'm going to kick you in the balls and watch your nuts, and I'm running, buddy.
Oh, yeah, you shoot him directly in the kneecap and then run.
Yeah, he's a monster. He really is. Nicest guy you ever want to meet, but that guy's a legit badass. He ain't nobody that I'd want to fuck with. I mean,
no, not at all.
You don't want to meet Chili Willie in a dark alley at 3 a.m. when he had a couple of drinks.
That's hilarious.
Anywho, let's continue on about Tony Cage. So you left Japan. You were at TNA. You traveled through all the indies, and you actually made a living through the indies, which proves that indies are strong, wrestling is strong, and anyone that bitches out there about it ain't what they want it to be, well, hey, you ain't working. So that's proven right there.
Man, I tell every young guy that it's about what you make it. It's about what you make it. You know, everybody has different degrees of success. I think as you get older, your vision of success changes. You know, like when I was a kid, I just wanted to be in a wrestling ring, you know, and then I wanted to have my first match, and then I wanted to be on TV and this and that. I think guys just got to have their eyes on the prize so they know what they're going to try to get into and what they're trying to do so they can focus. I don't think a lot of the guys that are coming in, they don't have to work for it that hard. So they don't put as much into it. You know, I think me and you kind of came about the same way. You know, I think of wrestling as being a fraternity that I was let into. I mean, I'll kill for some of these guys and take secrets to the grave. You know what I mean? Just the way I feel about it.
Oh yeah, I was trained by Timber, and Timber was one of those guys, and he's a real shooter. He's one of them guys when you're at the hotel after everything is over. He's like, so Nugs, what the fuck was your spot? What was the psychology? What the fuck were you supposed to be at? And he told me the first day, he was like, dude, I got one or two ways to handle it. I could pat you on the head and say you did a great job, kid. He goes, so you could check your fucking ego at the door, and if you pay attention, you actually might be able to figure out what's going on and actually be good at this shit. And I said, well, I don't know shit, right. So I'll take number two, sir. Choice number two, sir.
Hey, man, I'm with you. I mean, anywhere that I ever went, you know, I just tried to learn from every single one of these guys. Because, you know, they experience success on some level. So if you want to get a level higher, you know, to figure out what these guys were doing. And I'll say this, during this time frame, one of the promoters I was working for up in Boston, Dan Marotti, they ended up putting me with Paul Bearer. Percy actually personally chose me. He watched the locker room one night, and he was like, I want to work with that kid. And
wow.
I got to work with Percy for I think, 8 or 9 years on the indie scene, up and down the roads. Now, you talk about fun.
I am a huge Bears fan, definitely, and marked. But I am a bigger Percy Pringle. Was he Percy Pringle, or was he the Paul Bearer when he was with you, Percy?
He would switch it up. It just depended on where he was at. You know, if we were up in the Northeast, he typically did the, you know, he was announced as Paul, as Percy, but he would kind of come out basically looking like Paul Bearer. You know what I mean?
I got you. Was he cut promos as the with a high pitched voice? Because how did you keep a straight face when he did the high pitched voice and stay in character? Because I'd be cracking the fuck up. If I heard
you mean
that.
I cracked up and we had to reshoot the promo 47 times.
Lily Cage is the best wrestler anywhere. I'd be cracking the hell up to hear him talk that next to me. I'm serious.
Hey, listen, it's one of the best times of my life. I ended up being stuck up in Boston, Massachusetts for 5 or 6 days. And it was me, the Iron Sheik, and Paul Bearer. 5 days.
You, the Iron Sheik, and Paul Bearer for 5 days.
Yes. It was.
Wow.
You talk about incredible. Completely two opposite ends. Percy was the type of guy. He liked to drink Jack Daniels and Coke. So I mean, we always had whiskey and Coke. If you're in the ring, he probably told me 150 times, "So let's go home." So he had a whiskey and Coke in the, you know what I mean, in the back. But man, he was such a, for a guy that had been there and done that, he gave me so much knowledge and insight and really helped me get to another level. But you know what I mean? Cause that guy had been everywhere. You know, in Texas, he was real big and been around everybody, you know, in WWE, he was office at one point. So I mean, he really was helping me out and doing a lot for my career, and we were kind of moving all over the place, but yeah, I had a lot of fun. Imagine going to any restaurant. You got Paul Bearer walking up first. He orders and he tries to be as normal as possible because, you know, again, he's a big guy. Percy was 6'1", 6'2", you know, 300 to 500 pounds depending on the year.
Right.
He's trying to be as normal as possible, not create any waves. You know, he just wants to eat his food and be normal. Then you got the Iron Sheik. Orders more food than he needs. They tell him, you know, it's $32.16. Now, I don't know if you've ever been around Sheik for a long period of time, but he brings a briefcase with him wherever he goes. And inside that briefcase, he has pictures. He breaks in. He's got his pictures. He's got a belt in there. He's got some gold medals. He takes out the gimmick, and they're like, it's $32.50. And he's like, Bubba, let me show you something. And he takes out his gimmick pictures. And he's like, Iron Sheik. WWF, now WWE World Champion. I give you this picture, and you give me $4.16 change. I've never seen anybody in my life that tried to pay for everything in pictures.
How often would he get it off?
Dude, I mean, 80% of the time he could get it.
Oh, nice.
That guy was a hustler. I used to tell my wife, because we used to hang out with Sheik for a long time, man, really for over 10 years. I probably spent two months with that guy. You know what I mean? At least 60 or 70 days. You know, and just having fun. And he's a great guy. You know, I know everybody kind of sees the crazy Iron Sheik, and he can be that guy.
Right.
You know, I was somebody in Japan, they call it red light fever. You know, when the red light's on, that's when everybody's working real hard. And he's the same way.
Right.
You know, that camera's on, man. He is working. He's doing big stuff in Twitter right now. You know, he's like one of the top 20 Twitter followers.
Yeah. He'll sit there and drop Twitter insults one after another. I've seen it before. It's amazing.
Hilarious.
Yeah, he's hilarious.
Original shoot promo that he did, you know, when he was making everybody humble, this and that. Dude, I was there. I'm in the background.
Oh, my God.
Hysterical. Oh, my God. You know, we're sitting in this studio, and he's just going off. And me and Percy, we were up here, you know, again, we're drinking Jack and Coke. We were just about to go to a place called Kowloon's. If you ever get a chance to go to Boston, Massachusetts, you got to go to Kowloon's.
Uh-huh.
That's where all the boys go. So we're sitting,
okay.
You know, we're trying to just go and eat, and he's just talking, and he's just going on for hours. I mean, dude, hilarious. Listen, one of the favorite times of my life, I'm sitting in my hotel room. We went out to Kowloon's, we come back, and it's me, the Iron Sheik, Abyss, and I think it was the Boogeyman, the promoter,
okay.
And two fans. So we're sitting
okay.
in there, and it wasn't even a fan. It was a former referee. He used to work in the business, and his mom. Now, his mom starts
okay.
really hitting on the Sheik.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Sheik, you know, do you need anything? You need something to drink? Can I get you anything? Thing I know, Sheik, who can barely move since his accident, you know, double knee surgery, the whole bit, right? Works
uh-huh.
that gimmick, man, you know, works you where he can barely walk. He starts doing
uh-huh.
squats, dips in the chair, like starts working out.
Wow.
For 20 minutes, he starts working out over there in the corner. And he starts, you know, he starts talking to Abyss, and he's like, Chris, brother, you know, you got to get in shape. He's just talking shit to him. I mean, hilarious,
wow.
dude.
Yeah, yeah.
But, man,
cool.
I was thinking
baby.
About the business. Yeah, man, I think the best thing about the business is the camaraderie. You know what I mean? Especially when you're kind of winding down. You don't really think as much
yeah.
on the matches. You know, you got those matches that you really loved. But, man, I think about more just being on the road with the boys and hanging out in the hotels and the restaurants and, you know, closing down bars. And, you know, that's what I think about the business.
Right.
Some of the most fun you can ever have, I think, is just being with the boys.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I look forward to traveling on weekends. I call it a working vacation that I have to actually be in a wrestling ring and work for, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes, and then I get a chance to actually spend time with my friends.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
That's I consider
yeah,
it like
some
that,
of the best
man.
Time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I've closed down the bar. You know, and the cool thing about wrestling is being able to work and hang out with, you know, your idols. You know what I mean?
Right.
Listen, here's one of my favorite stories. Hanging out with Sean Waltman. And me and Sean are real friendly, man. We've known each other for a couple of years. So every time we see each other, we kind of hang out. We're up in Boston. You know, and Sean's a gimmick man. And he had got all gimmicked up. And I was like, hey, man, just come hang out in here. We're sitting here and we're just hanging out. And we had a party in the room. And finally, everything's dying down. And, man, it's really only, you know, 1 o'clock. Something like that in the morning, 1:30. We'll see Sean, and he's popping M&M, peanut M&Ms.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see him, man. He's slowly about to go out. You know, he's eating an M&M in his mouth. He's not even chewing at this point. He's just slowly starting to lean, leaning harder,
mm-hmm.
leaning harder. Finally, he passes out. He's got a mouthful of M&Ms, about to choke to death. You know what I mean? He finally starts choking. He wakes up. I'm like, hey, man. You know, holy shit, you almost died. You know, you need to wake up.
Wow.
He gets up. He ends up eating the M&Ms. Well, he ends up falling back asleep. Now, me and him had a flight. I was leaving, I think, at 6. And I think he was leaving at 9. Well, I mean, he's in my room, dude, and starts snoring like a Mack truck. I said, okay. Now, he had ribbed me earlier in the day. So I said, okay, here's his receipt. I called the front desk. I said, hey, I need a wake-up call in 10 minutes. They're like, in 10 minutes? I said, yes, in 10 minutes. I need a wake-up call. I hang up the phone, turn all the lights off, go to the clock, set it ahead till I think it's 7 o'clock in the morning because that's when he had to leave and
uh-huh.
go to the airport. Alarm goes off. You know, the guy calls on the phone. I wake him up. I'm like, Sean, man, hey, didn't you say you had to catch a flight at 7? Man, you got to go ahead and get on the road. He goes, gets all his shit, you know what I mean, packs. Gets taken, you know what I mean? We call a cab for me, gets in the cab, goes to the airport. I don't think he was flying out until like 11 o'clock. He calls me about an hour later. He's like, you, hey, what's the rating on this?
Oh, you're fine. You got another 45 minutes.
No. What's the rating on
this? You can say whatever you want, bro.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we're
rated R. Rated R. Go ahead.
Yeah, he's like, you motherfucker. Oh, man, he let me have it. But, like I said, we were just having a good time. just a good
time.
So
he actually got all the way to the airport before he realized what time it was?
Yeah, he had no idea. I mean, you know, because we had
wow.
You know, we were wasted.
That is a fucking
we just had a good time.
Great fucking trip.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Well, that's a good one. You got to go all the way to the airport. Wow, poor Sean Waltman.
Now, here's a good I'm going to leave this guy's name out of it just because
okay.
me and him still see each other, and we've kind of resolved
okay.
our differences since then.
Okay.
This guy is a name. He's a huge guy, right? He also he likes people standing on his face, preferably a female in heels.
Okay.
He'll pay for him to do it, right?
Okay.
He also liked boys. So one night,
oh,
my, yeah, you know, it's just one of those things, and, you know, it is what it is. We go up to, I think we were in New Hampshire, man, if I'm not mistaken, New Hampshire, Vermont, as I'm talking to him. And if I'm not mistaken, man, Tony, which is the guy's shoot name, but I won't go any further than that.
Okay.
He was one of the first names that I had ever really met. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So we're sitting there, and as we're talking, I kind of got the feeling of, I think this guy's going to try to get me later. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I go and talk to my friend who was from that area, and I said, hey, I just wanted to talk to you. I said, this to me. He said, yeah, that's exactly what he meant. He actually likes boys, this and that. And I said, whoa, okay. I gotcha. So I didn't know if I was being ribbed. I didn't know if I was being punked out. All I knew is you step forward and win or lose, you know what I mean? You step up.
Right.
Now, my buddy is an exotic animal fanatic. They have, you know, 4 snakes, 8 squirrels, 10 chickens. You know, they have all this stuff in their house, prairie dogs and all this stuff. He had just bought a tarantula and a black scorpion.
Mm-hmm.
I said, hey, man, I need the keys to the car, and I'm going to owe you some money. I went and took both of those, opened up the boxes, and dumped it on the guy, and literally, started hitting him with the folding metal chair as hard as I could until the boys broke us up.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
is that
man.
Tony Ellis? Is it Tony Ellis? Tony Atlas story. It was Tony Atlas. I remember one time I was with Tony Atlas. He was in Columbia with us, and he was like, "Hey, we're riding back. We're going back." Hello.
Yeah, I think I lost
Hello?
You there for a second. I'm back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got my Tony Atlas story. Tony Atlas was
I haven't seen Tony Atlas in a long time.
Oh yeah, Tony Atlas for a long time, and we stopped at the store and. We're going back to the hotel, and I'm going to hang out for a second, you know. And I'm hanging out with a couple of brothers, and Tony Atlas buys me a drink at the store. I was like, oh, thank you, appreciate you. We get back to the hotel, you know, we're hanging out, and Tony asked me, hey, I got a folding couch here in the room. Do you want to stay over? I said, no, man, I'm good. I'm getting in the car and driving home. And before earlier in the night, he told one of the workers that he had pretty feet. So I was like, what the fuck? Yeah, Tony Atlas.
Yeah, man, he's one of a kind.
Yeah, so needless to say, I wasn't going to stay overnight on Tony Atlas's fold-out couch. Because the way
funny.
He was looking at me, he wasn't looking at my feet.
Right. That's so funny.
Oh, yeah. That was.
Yeah, you have to watch people. You have to watch them.
Yeah,
man, I'm telling you,
man.
Isn't it crazy the amount of different people that you meet in this business?
Oh, yeah, you meet some crazy ones. You do. You definitely meet some crazy ones, and you meet. That's one thing Tony Atlas told me, though. He told me, he said, look, he told me the first time he got into business, he said he worked in a show. He said he didn't know about the worker's entrance. He went to the front and paid for a ticket to get in, and they paid for a ticket, and they was like, no, you come through the back. He went through the back. He said, he goes, you remember he was there. He goes, and they started dropping the end bomb. He goes, telling end jokes. And he's like, he goes, he just kind of played along with it, laughed. He walks outside the door and he looks between the crack of the door and some of the old schoolers are there. He goes, "Ah, the kid's going to be all right." He goes, "He didn't get all razzed up because we was dropping the end bomb left and right." He goes, "I think the kid's going to be all right." So he told me, he goes, "Just don't ever take the business serious. Because if you do," he goes, you'll hate the business." So I was trying to remember that. I
mean, yeah, that's true.
That's true. That was before he asked me if I wanted to sleep on his couch. But I'm not saying
that's the advice we're going to take. That's too funny.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah, man, but that's incredible the amount of guys that you get to work with.
Yeah.
I mean, over my career, man, I've got to work, you know, with Kid Cash and Chris Hamrick and Jason and PJ Just Incredible, Julio De Niro, Danny Doring and Roadkill, Jesus, Missy Hyatt, Tammy, Terry Runnels, Kong, God, I mean, you know, the list goes on and on, you know, Gold Dust and all these different guys, Barry Darso,
right. You
know, it's amazing, Jimmy Snuka. I remember working Jimmy Snuka, dude, you know, incredible, you know.
Wow.
And I know he's got a lot of stuff going on now, you know, during that time, I didn't know all that was going on, you know, he was still Jimmy Snuka.
Right.
Now, that guy, I never seen in any locker room I've ever been into. I've always seen Jimmy go pee in a corner, and by the end of the night, he has a pile of cigarettes next to his chair.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember Jimmy Snuka. Back in the day when I worked at Legends Fan Fest, they had me work at security, and I'm walking with Jimmy, and I'm telling him. That's the other reason I said I was allowed to watch pro wrestling before that, and I told him the whole story. You know, my mom thought you were great. She said, "My Jimmy," you know. I said, before that, I said, I wasn't allowed to watch wrestling. You think Jimmy was like, "Oh, yeah, that's a cool story. Yeah, that's fun." Yeah, he looks at me, he pulls out a pack of cigarettes out of his fanny pack and says, "Where could we smoke?" over here. Yeah, so.
Yep. Yeah, he was pretty dry.
Jimmy. Yeah. The only time
I've ever seen him. Yeah, that's him, man. The only time I've ever seen him actually be in a good mood. We were working, I think, in Rhode Island. And he was the main event, and he was doing whatever he was doing. And, you know, anytime I get with a legend, man, I just sit around, and, you know, if there's anything I do for him, whatever, you know, I always try to be there for him. So we're sitting there talking and just listening to stories. And in the first match, a guy does the Superfly splash off the top rope.
No!
So, you know, all the boys pop in the back. You know, and we go right to Jimmy. Jimmy, you're not going to believe this. This guy is stealing your gimmick. And you know how those guys from the 80s are about that. Oh, stealing the Superfly gimmick, brother. He gets all riled up. He's like, "Tell him to come here, brother. Tell him to come here, brother." We get the guy to come over. And Jimmy lights into him. "Oh, you think you're the main event, brother? Ah." And, you know, he's got his fingers going. His arms, you know, he's got his promo on this kid. Oh, my God, I was dying. And then finally at the end of it, you know, he's getting all wild up. He's telling the guy he's about to whoop his ass. He goes over, and the kid is scared shitless.
Right.
And Jimmy, he almost throws a punch, but it ends up being like a slap, and he barely touches the guy. And he was like, "Just ribbing your brother. Welcome to the business," and went and sat down and didn't say a word to anybody else for the rest of the night.
Oh, wow. Nice. Nice. That's a great rib. Made the guy about piss his pants and then said, "Oh, welcome to the business." Good stuff.
But, man, I had so much fun hanging out with some of the legends, you know what I mean? Barry Darso, these guys were a lot of fun. Jason was always a lot of fun. Just incredible. I was real lucky, you know, hanging out with Greg and then being there with Jason and PJ. I really got in with the ECW locker room and got to hang out with all these guys. I mean, literally, Boz Mahoney would be coming in doing the training. And then, like I said, Jason had guys in there all the time. You know, for me, there was nobody bigger than these guys. You know what I mean? I didn't care how much money these ECW guys were making compared to WWE. To me, you know, I was a big fan, and they were just, you know, Boz Mahoney or Hulk Hogan could have came in the door, the same person as far as I was concerned. Yeah, man, I got to have all these guys, like I said, learn a lot, you know, get to ride the road with some of these guys, man. It's just a great time, great time.
Nice, nice. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's awesome. So if you could go back in time to any era in pro wrestling and wrestle, what era would you want to go back to? Why?
Dude, Mid-Atlantic, 1988. Horsemen.
Mid-Atlantic,
when they were thriving. Yeah, man.
Yeah.
If you watch any of that stuff, and don't get me wrong, you know what I mean? You got your stuff like Carlito's dad and Abby, you know, and that is what it
right.
is, you know. But, I mean, and then you got, you know, the Andersons and Tully and Manny Fernandez. I mean, and these guys could just go. You know, you can pop in their stuff now, and to me it's so much better than some of the product that's on the TV now.
Right.
But, I mean,
right.
as far
I
as any era – I don't think there's anything that beats that time frame. I mean, and the Attitude Era was good. You know, I was a big fan of Austin and these guys, and they were much bigger personalities. But as a fan, and, you know, wrestling's subjective. Everybody likes their own thing. As a fan, I'm a big fan for the 1988 Mid-Atlantic time frame.
Gotcha, gotcha. So what do you think? What do you think is wrong in pro wrestling? And if you could change it, what would you change?
I would, number one, it would have to be harder to get into.
Okay.
You know, when I came up, and this was just in 98, I mean, you really had to earn your way. You know, I always tell people that, you know, you got to get pounded on, but pounded on in a healthy way. You know, it's nothing mm-hmm. like where these fraternities are killing people and that kind of thing. I think
right.
in wrestling, you kind of have to get pounded on a little bit to see if you're made for this business. Because if not,
right.
you're really just a guy that just bought some tights and boots anyway. I think if it was harder to get into, it would be a lot better, you know, because all the guys that really could do it and make it would be coming through. Really, that would be my number one. I think right now the with NXT, and that's kind of kicking a lot of stuff into gear, you know, for a lot of people. But I think with him recognizing that, and, you know, and having that partnership with Gabe down in Florida, and, you know, you got Ring of Honor right here, you know, I'm telling you that the time is right for, and, you know, what is it, PWX out of Charlotte, you know, great little company. They've been on the rise here lately. You know, there's a lot of good companies out there to work. You know, I work for Mike O'Brien up in Connecticut when I'm up in New England.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and he's drawing 1,000 people just about every show. You know, you see
wow.
big time wrestling doing the same thing, drawing 3,000, 4,000 people sometimes.
Right.
You know, when we ran here in North Carolina, the first time I had Percy come in, you know, we drew 890.
890.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, so
wow.
wrestling's
wow.
on the rise, man. It can be done. You know, the problem is
yeah.
A, being too easy to get into as a wrestler, and B, too easy to get into to promote.
Right.
You know, when
right.
I first broke in, everybody up and down the card paid accordingly. And I tell everybody, except for the Italian Stallion, and I don't even care to throw his name out like that, because anybody that worked with him would tell you the same thing. You had to fight that guy for $5. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah,
but
I've heard stories about
part,
him, how he treated it. I heard stories about how he treated the fellas. Don't get me wrong, gave you opportunities, but he robbed you fucking blind. I heard all about the shit.
Oh, yeah, I mean, he would do anything to try to make money back. But,
yeah.
I mean, just, you know, it's crazy, but I think that would be my number one thing.
Right.
I think if people treated it more like a job. I was talking about this to somebody the other day. You know, if you're a promoter and you don't have envelopes the day before the show, you're not a promoter.
Right.
You know, if you're trying to work everything off the door, you're not a promoter, man. Like, you're not, you know, you think, I watch big-time wrestling go from drawing 100 people to 4,000. I watch Mike O'Brien do the same thing over time. You know, those guys did it right. They brought people that the fans wanted to see, and they put on matches that the fans want to see. I mean, it's a simple formula.
Yeah, it's definitely working, because, I mean, that's an indie show and you're talking 4,000 people. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, what did they draw at Dorton Arena?
Don't know. I mean, it looked like a good crowd. It looked like a great crowd. I mean, I seen from looking at the pictures and the background video when I was watching the Battle of the Sexes, Baby Doll versus Jim Cornette. I mean, it looked like they had a really good crowd there, Spartanburg.
Yeah. I mean, and they're doing really good. And the crazy thing is, the owner of BTW, man, I remember when he was a camera guy just for a company that I worked for. And man, I remember when Chris DeJoseph, who was a WWE writer for 10 years on SmackDown, he's also the executive producer for Lucha Underground. I remember when he was on the Indies, man, just trying to earn a spot. I talk to Chris pretty regularly.
Yeah, well, that product, Lucha Underground, I think that is a great product. I think that's some of the best stuff that's out there today. I mean, I like the entire. It feels more real. It definitely does. I like that product.
I love the promo work and the feel of it. You know, sometimes the Lucha stuff kind of takes me out of the moment. You know, I'm all for a good, holy shit, that was a great move. But, you know, sometimes I need it to be more real. You get what I'm saying? Sometimes Lucha stuff, if I watch too many Lucha things in a row, you know, I just become disinterested. But now, overall, their overall product and the way they present it, incredible, man. Now, I think the secret is to have somebody that's working with the Lucha guys, you know, like Johnny Mundo and Chavo and who's out there? Mad Dog. Who's that? I'm trying to think. Hernandez, I think, is up there. Or he was at one point. I think they just brought Ray in, Mysterio. So, I mean, those guys are doing it, man. I mean, they could really – I think they're going to help revolutionize the business's way as it's presented. You know what I mean?
Right. And I like that there's – and I love to see that there's other competition out there. Competition makes other people step up their game. It gives opportunity as well. I'd love to see that. I mean, I hope some other companies get a shot. You know, I would love to see if it was possible. I mean, if I could do it, or some other guys would do it, I'd love to see some videos or some kind of streaming something like pay per view go on a company like Netflix or something. I think it would be great. I would love to see that. You know, where you could go and watch. Maybe a DVD, you know, it'd be a series of a pro wrestling company. I think it would be great.
I completely agree. I don't know how that process works, but I'm surprised it hasn't been done already.
Oh yeah, because I search pro wrestling. You search pro wrestling on Netflix. There's like four things in it, and the four things have nothing to do with like WWE at all. Like the one that actually they have out is the rest. I think you might have been on it. The wrestling with Jesus, with the guy worked in South Carolina. I know Chris Hamrick was on it, and I've seen a couple other wrestlers. But it's a story about his rise and fall. Yeah, that's on Netflix. I mean, that was in Carolina, but it was like 2011. I think it was when it was put out. I've seen some people that
have
I recognize
seen
in it, but. I've seen the Sheik movie. Yeah, I've seen that one. That was on there.
Man, that was incredible.
That was a great one. I love that DVD. His story was phenomenal. But I would love to see some more pro wrestling. Maybe you know, like how TNA tried to bust its ass to be little WWE. When they had the Octagon ring and they were doing pay per views. I mean, that would be something that like Netflix or something could be able to do. I mean, I'd love to see some companies get a shot.
So, yeah, I'm with you, brother. I'm with you. Like I said, surprised that hasn't happened yet.
And I'm not saying that because I would love a job or nothing. I'm saying that I think it's good for the state of pro wrestling in a whole.
I'm with
you. In my opinion. Yeah. But So what is next for you? What do you see yourself doing next?
You know, I really started promoting here the last couple years. Me and John Cena Sr., Dan Marotti, we've actually been running a nonprofit group where just about most of the weekend we're traveling between, you know, Boston and Atlanta, and we're just running events. We're raising, I know just on my end, we're raising $30,000 to $40,000 a year for whether it be rescue departments, police departments, Special Olympics, whatever the group that we're working with. So I'm really just trying to work on that, create something for North Carolina. You know what I mean? The Hardys are doing really well with Omega. And I think I could do something similar in my area. You know, I'm real big in my community, and You know, I grew up in a little farm community, so anytime anybody does anything, you know, especially like when I was on and was being on TNA TV and whatnot, you know, I was a star in my hometown.
Right.
So I'd really like to do something and localize a couple of different buildings. I actually got 4 buildings right now that I'm looking at
nice.
And hoping to run 12 to 15 shows just in the North Carolina area in the next year.
Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
And just doing that through traveling,
awesome.
Man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get phone calls every day to come to work and to do this or do that. After all this time, I still love the business as much as I did when I broke in.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I always told myself, I mean, I know at times it's a lot of work, but I mean, I told myself as long as I'm enjoying it and it doesn't feel like a tedious task, I'll continue to work at pro wrestling in some aspect, in
yeah.
some capacity. Yeah, and you know,
that's right.
I mean, that's one of the reasons. That's one of the reasons I stepped out of my comfort zone and wanted to start my own company, because you can complain about the state of pro wrestling, but if you're not willing to step out of your comfort zone and try to make a difference and make a difference and change something, you have no right to complain whatsoever, because you're not doing nothing.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely right, man.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I'd love to see more companies run good shows. And people ask me, well, what do you think about this? I don't believe in that competition stuff. I mean, there ain't no such thing as competition. I mean, this is indie wrestling. I mean, somebody's running a show.
Exactly.
I mean, there's no territories no more. There is no – I mean, you can have respect for somebody, you know, and not try to run the same building that they run. But at the end of the day, if someone runs that town, I mean, you have a right to run that town just like anybody else does. I mean, it's the truth.
Yeah,
there isn't territories no more, but – yeah, but – yeah,
but,
yeah,
but,
definitely. So.
Yeah, man. But, I got to wrap this up. I got to go put my little one to bed. I got a 7-year-old.
All right.
Believe it or not. Actually,
okay.
I think I was with
you
guys down at the beach when my wife
yeah.
was pregnant. Do you remember that?
Yes,
how crazy
I do
is
remember
that? My
vividly.
7 now.
That is 7 years old, brother. That's great.
Yeah.
Dude, I'll let you go. I hope we could talk to you again another time, brother. Definitely.
Anytime.
I appreciate the time. Yeah, I appreciate the time you spent with us. It's been a great interview. On behalf of Big Country, hey, Big Country, brother, we're going to wrap it up, brother.
Man. Dylan, man, we definitely got to have that match that we were never able to have, man, since the young boy decided to
we need to get on Kip about that.
Oh, dude.
I think that's money, all the way.
Kip's so in and out, man. He'll, like, throw an announcement out there, like, you know, hey, we're about to run the show, and then you don't hear from him for, like, 6 months.
man. You nailed it right on the head.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time, Dylan. God bless you for coming on the show. We'll talk to you another time real soon. Next week, we have March 15th. We've got Ethan Case on the show. That's going to be great. So, all you people next week, tell a friend, tell an enemy. I don't care. Tell everyone about the show, and we'll see you again next month. Next week, Tuesday night, 8 p.m. And till then, see ya. Thanks again, Dylan. We'll talk to you later, brother. Bye.
Peace.